Hi, this is Michael Sunoff with Michael Sunoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called, Does What You Eat Really Have an Impact on Your Wallet, Your Waistline, and the World? Dr. Susan Rubin, nutritionist and health food author, says many dietitians become too concerned with calories and fat grams and lose sight of the big picture. What she tells her patients to do not only helps them lead healthier lives, but it also helps them save money and the environment too. Because what you eat has a connection to all of these things. And in this audio, you'll hear her top 10 ways to do that. Dr. Rubin says it all starts by building what she calls a food IQ. In other words, there are big picture costs involved in processing foods, from what it takes in fertilizer and pesticides to grow the food to what it takes to truck it over to your local supermarket. And in this interview, you'll hear how being mindful can make a big difference in your life. You'll also hear the truth about household cleaning products and your health and why you won't hear any of that from the media or the big chemical industries. And the only two ingredients you really need to get everything clean. You'll hear about the environmental and health differences you can make just by switching to local tap water. You'll hear what Dr. Rubin means when she says you should pay your farmer, not your doctor, and a website that will help you find farmers markets in your area no matter where you live. You'll also hear exactly what a victory garden is and the benefits to your pocket and your health that growing one will bring you. You'll hear strategies for making healthy eating fun for the whole family, especially if you have a picky eater or two. From what you choose to clean with to what you put in your mouth, being healthy can help you save a ton of money, and not just in doctor's bills, while also helping you save the earth. And in this audio interview, you'll be mindful of a new approach to buying and eating more healthily. And in this audio, you'll hear how to do it. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Sunoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Sunoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Our guest today is Dr. Susan Rubin, a nutritionist, better school food advocate, and mother of three, who specializes in supporting people to create better health for themselves and their families. Welcome, Dr. Rubin. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do with your nutrition practice?
I have an interesting background. I practiced as a dentist for over 14 years before I went back to school for nutrition. And when I went back, I went and studied a very eclectic collection of courses. I studied integrative nutrition in New York City, and I also did a one-year program in Chinese herbal medicine. So I really tend to work with people around food, not necessarily nutrition, and I do believe there's a difference.
How do those things differ?
Well, when you've got a dietitian or a nutritionist that's really looking at macronutrients and micronutrients, and they're counting calories and they're counting fat grams, and a lot of times they lose track of the big picture, and the big picture is food. And food really nourishes us on a different level. I'm talking whole food and also lifestyle. It's not just what we're eating, but how we're eating that really can optimize our health.
So what do you recommend for people when they come in to talk with you?
Well, first of all, I usually have them give me some sort of food and life diary for at least 3 or 4 days. So I kind of have an idea of what their life looks like. When are they getting up? What are they having for breakfast? Where are they eating? How are they eating? And from there, really, we work to make some adjustments because small changes can really result in big results down the road. So that's really how I work with people, utilizing food and lifestyle. And I really do get people to get back into the kitchen and cook.
Great. So you do classes with people and show them how to cook and all that kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah, I do hands-on cooking classes. I have amazing kitchen garden office space.
Your wallet, your waistline, and the world. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that has just kind of come up in this past year, you know, as gas reached $4 a gallon for a while, and we're looking at all these things that were going on with climate change. And so it made me realize that a lot of what I've been telling my clients to do doesn't just help their health, but it also impacts the planet, and it also can save you money. So I kind of came up with a top 10 list of things that you can do to help your wallet, to help your waistline, and to help the world. So I thought maybe we'd talk about some of those today.
Great. And what do we start with on that?
Well, we could start with cleaning products because, once again, this isn't just about food. It's about our life. And, you know, a lot of the things in our home can be another source of toxins that can impact our health. And one really simple, easy, super cheap way to change things is to just change what we're using to clean. And two really great ingredients that you can use that are totally non-toxic are baking soda and just plain old white vinegar.
Okay, and will that take care of all the germs and things that I know a lot of people are concerned about that kind of thing in their kitchen?
Yeah, the media and our chemical companies have really brainwashed us into believing that typhoid fever is lurking in every corner of our house. But generally, the place that really has got the bacteria in our kitchen are things like sponges and dish rags and things like that. Cutting boards, pop them in the dishwasher. Microwave your sponge if you wish, or throw it out very often. But you don't really need toxic poisons to keep germs in check. Vinegar and baking soda will really work. Next on my list is we've got to get back to drinking good old tap water because it's almost insane that we think about all this bottled water that has come around. Why are we paying Coke and Pepsi good money to drink filtered water when we could probably get just as good water out of our tap? The thing we have to remember is those plastic water bottles are made from petroleum, and it also consumes water to make those bottles. And then it takes a lot of oil to transport all these bottles of water from beautiful springs from all over the world. You know, the bottle of Fiji water really does come from Fiji. It didn't walk here. There's a lot we can do, even if you invested in a great water filter for your home and got yourself a nice reusable bottle, like a clean canteen or a sink bottle, you'll end up saving thousands of dollars a year. So it's really a simple thing to do. The other wacky thing that's happened with water is we've got all these drinks that are calling themselves water, but they're really not. There's sport drinks, there's drinks with vitamins, not to name any names, but these drinks really aren't water. They're flavored liquids with sugar and colors and a lot of silly health claims. So the other thing is just to go back to drinking water. Can really impact our health in a positive way.
So avoid all those additives and colorings and stick to tap water.
Exactly. Pretty simple, huh?
And less expensive, too.
Yep.
All right. What else do you have?
Try not to eat food ingredients that you can't pronounce, because what's happened is we end up eating a lot of packaged, processed food that actually costs a lot more than real food. So if you can shop at the bulk bins and buy whole grains and beans and nuts, you're going to save loads of money. Whole grains are way cheaper than all those box cereals. You can just get yourself some rolled oats or some steel-cut oats, cook that up for breakfast, you're going to save loads of money. The other issue with all these packaged, processed foods is they're made with loads of corn and soy. And corn and soy are our country's top two crops, and more than 80% of the corn and soy that we eat are genetically modified. And we don't really know that that's been proven safe. There's evidence that links some of this increase in allergies that we're seeing in our kids to some of these genetically modified corn and soy ingredients. So the other piece is how we're growing all that corn and soy basically utilizes a lot of fertilizer and pesticides. And the runoff from these two chemicals contributes to dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico and the Chesapeake Bay and out on the west. This impacts the fishing industry. So this is the big picture cost of eating this cheap processed packaged food. So we really need to get back to eating real food. I always jokingly say food that you can pronounce with a third grade reading level. So none of these wacky ingredients.
How do you get the kids to buy into that? Do you have any tips for that?
Well, you take your kids to the farmer's market. That would be a great way to do it because there's really nothing at that farmer's market that kids shouldn't be able to eat. So it's really a question of making it fun, making it a game. My youngest daughter, who's 11, she knows when she's in the supermarket with me and she wants to get a box of cereal, she knows that if she can't pronounce everything on that label, I'm not going to let her get it. So it's just kind of a rule in our house, and, you know, she gets to a couple of words that she stumbles on, she puts the box back on the shelf. She knows, because I've taught her basically, you don't want to be eating those chemicals. So kids can buy in, but basically we've got to get moms and dads to kind of walk the talk first, and then it's not that hard.
So it's an education process and getting them involved in the whole experience.
Yeah, I like to call it building your food IQ.
That's a great term. All right, and then how about supporting local farmers?
Well, we really all need to do that, no matter where we are in this country, because really the healthiest food is closest to home. I have a saying, pay your farmer, not your doctor. And there's a great website called www.localharvest.org, and if you put in your zip code in the localharvest.org website, they will set you up with all of the nearby farmers markets and also CSA programs.
Great. And what is a CSA program?
CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And the way that works is you pay a farmer one fee, generally at the beginning of the year, and then you get food every week. You get a share of the food every week. So while you don't really get to choose what you're getting, you get whatever the farm is harvesting that week, it's really kind of a fun and exciting way to play with food. And it causes you to be very creative, and it also supports you in eating seasonally.
Wonderful. And those are around the country, pretty easy to get to?
Are growing everywhere. And as I said, the localharvest.org website will set you up with wherever you're living, you'll find some CSA programs.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Now, another tip here I see is slow down, mindful eating. What is that all about?
Part of this is not just what we're eating, but how we're eating. And one of the pieces we need to remember is rest and digest. Rest and digest is the opposite of the fight and flight syndrome, which you've probably heard about, right? Stress causes us to respond with fight or flight, and that changes our entire metabolism. The opposite of that is rest and digest. So when we're eating, we should really be mindful and slow. We should eat sitting down. We should eat at a table. One of the things I love to do with kids is counting the number of chews. Can you get up to 30 chews per mouthful? Really slowing it down, it changes your food totally, and it really optimizes your nutrient absorption of that food. Another fun thing to do is to eat with chopsticks. Changes the entire adventure of eating when you are picking up food mindfully, piece by piece with some chopsticks. So by slowing down, you really end up eating less but enjoying more. So I always encourage people to take a look at that, like how are we eating? Not just what are we eating.
We're talking with Dr. Susan Rubin today, and you can find out more about Dr. Rubin at www.drsusanrubin.com. That's www.drsusanrubin.com. All right, so slow down and do mindful eating. What about the concept of growing your own food?
Growing your own food has loads of benefits. Even if it's as small as just a windowsill box or a container garden, there's lots of reasons why we want to start growing our own food. Number one, it's the cure for the nature deficit disorder that many of us suffer from. Because of technology, we're in front of screens much of the day. We're indoors under fluorescent or artificial lighting. So getting outside and dealing with some plants, weeding and watering and watching them grow is a great stress reducer. It also causes us to slow down and reconnect with the cycles of nature. Because you know what? You can't force a green bean to grow. It's going to grow at its own rate. Food that you grow yourself is going to be much fresher than anything you could buy at a store. And fresher food is going to have higher nutrient content. The other thing is that you're going to save money, because a pack of seeds is only $2. And even if you were to buy a flat of plants, that's only $3 or $4. You really get a huge return on your investment. You know, we just had a big event called Slow Food Nation out in the San Francisco area, and they did a lot of victory gardens and set those things up. And we're really looking at that piece of maybe growing food is the patriotic way to work our way towards independence of foreign oil. Our grandparents and parents back in the 40s, they grew victory gardens. Maybe we could recreate that now. Because if you think about it, our food uses a lot of oil. Our industrial food system when our food is traveling 1,000 to 2,000 miles between the farm and our plate, we're burning a lot of oil to get it there. So by growing our own food and by supporting local farmers and farmer markets and CSAs, we can cut back on our use of petroleum and therefore not have to pay all these wacky high prices for fuel. So growing your own food is a huge, huge priority, in my opinion. You know, it's kind of funny. I started out as a dentist, and then I kind of got into cooking, and now I'm into growing food. Who knew?
Now, you mentioned Victory Garden. What does that mean exactly?
Well, a Victory Garden is what they used to call gardens in the 1940s during World War II. Everybody would grow their own food so that, therefore, we would be supporting the soldiers who are overseas. It was thrifty. It was the patriotic thing to do. And I think perhaps right now we need to look at that as we're in wars across the world, somewhat connected to oil. I think that by growing our own food and starting that concept of the Victory Garden again, I think we can reclaim some energy independence and some food independence. A lot of countries in the world right now are not totally secure on their food. Food security is an issue. So it's kind of another way to go off the grid. You know, you could have a solar panel on your roof, or you could have a garden in your yard. Both ways will help create that sustainability that we all need. Another idea is going meatless at least one day of the week. The Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, they have a great website about it, and they call it Meatless Mondays. And while I'm not suggesting that everybody become a vegetarian, I am saying that as a nation, we're really eating way too much meat. And growing meat really has a huge carbon footprint because animal foods require more grain and more water than plant-based foods. So it's really not hard to take just one day a week and go meatless. I mean, there's lots of great recipes out there for beans and grains and lots of ways to do this. So once again, that could be another way that we can create a little more sustainability. It's just to go meatless one day a week, Meatless Monday. Another thing, remember, I'm not just about food, I'm about lifestyle here. Another really important thing that we should all be doing is looking at our screen time and thinking about how we might be able to turn off some of those screens. You know, it's not just the TV anymore. We've got computers, we've got cell phones, and all of these things take us out of connection to the present moment. I'm amazed how many people I see walking and texting. I mean, we're worried about people driving and texting.
Every teenager.
I'm seeing adults doing it, too, with the Blackberries. We jokingly call those Crackberries. But when you're connected with your phone like that, you're not at the moment. You know, it eats up your time without you realizing it. It can also be kind of addictive. I believe cell phone in teens is a real phenomenon. Guidance counselors tell me that this is interfering with a student's ability to pay attention in class. So we really need to kind of set limits. And once again, it's not just our kids, it's us. So turning off our screens will really help.
It's odd when it's become normal for people to walk around talking to themselves on their phones, isn't it?
Yeah. You're not fully present if you're doing that, and we're missing out. Part of what's creating this epidemic of ADD in our kids is these multitasking, multiple stimulations. So many of us don't realize, but, you know, a lot of us are eating in front of a tube or the TV or the computer screen. We've got to just break these habits. The other thing is powering it all down at night, you know, putting all of this on a power strip and turning it off. You'll save on your electric bill because they call this phantom power. We leave all these things on, and we're just paying the electric company for that.
Stress reduction, that kind of ties into that a bit.
Yeah, stress reduction. One of my favorite yoga moves is a really simple one called legs up the wall. And anybody can do this. It's really simple. You just lie on the floor, get close to a wall, and swing your legs up. This is called restorative yoga. And restorative yoga is just as powerful as all that hot yoga that you hear about, you know, the Bikram yoga and Ashtanga and all these other things. Just as important to do these restorative poses. But to put your legs up a wall really shifts your body, can lower your blood pressure, can undo a stressful day. I recommend to busy moms to do this with their kids after school. Just line up on the wall, get your legs up on the wall. Imagine that you've got water flowing down your legs into your belly, into your power center. This is a great, great thing. This can also help you drop weight, because what we're finding now is some of the weight gain we've got is connected to stress, back to that fight or flight syndrome versus rest and digest. So this is a really simple thing that anybody can do. The other piece that I think we all need to do more of is walking, because walking really lowers your stress in many, many ways. It's really a moving meditation. By walking your left arm and your right leg, you're doing kind of this cross crawl that balances out the left and right side of your brain. So walking is a really, really wonderful, extremely inexpensive exercise that we can all do. Most of us can do. So those are the two things I feel are really important. This is food for your spirit. Just like we've got food for our body, we need to consider what are we doing every day to reduce our stress.
For more interviews with the world's top health and medical experts, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Dr. Rubin, you've been called a troublemaker. Why are people calling you that?
There's a movie out there called Two Angry Moms, and I am one of the two angry moms. But I'm not the filmmaker. The other angry mom is Amy Califa, and she's the filmmaker. So I've explained to people that I'm the troublemaker. So basically, I started an organization called Better School Food, which is a not-for-profit that supports people in advocating for a better food environment for their kids in school. And Amy Califa came and approached me and wanted to see if she could follow me around for a year and make this movie. So the movie's done. As I said, the title is Two Angry Moms. You can visit the website, which is www.angrymoms.org.
So you practice what you preach.
I try to walk the talk. It's not always easy, and I'm not going to tell you that I'm perfect at it, but just want to inspire others to try to do what they can as well.
You also have some e-books that look very interesting. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. On the drsusanrubin.com website, I have a number of downloadable e-books. And the first one, which is the most popular, is my picky eater book. Because picky eater behavior can be one of the most challenging things in our day-to-day lives as parents. So I put together a booklet filled with strategies and recipes to win the picky eater war with your child, because it can be done. And my youngest was a picky eater, and I've worked with many, many picky eaters over the years. So I kind of put together this booklet to help parents who are dealing with that.
And what kind of recommendations do you give for dealing with picky eaters?
One of the things we have to do is we have to stop fighting, and we have to just start leading and really kind of seduce kids with the fun of food and make this not so much a battle. Not having a fight at the dinner table and setting up incentive programs. You know, there's a couple of best-selling books out right now that recommend sneaking healthy food into the junk food. And I'm just not a proponent of being sneaky or deceptive, because I really feel what goes around comes around. And if you're sneaky with your kids, then your kids are going to be sneaky with you. And it really does matter. I mean, it's doable. It's just going to take a little more time than you might think. Rome wasn't built in a day, and picky eaters weren't created overnight either. So this book really gently supports parents in finding ways out of the picky eater syndrome.
You also have Winning the Junk Food Wars. I'm losing that battle myself right now with my little ones. Perhaps you have some advice.
Yeah, well, part of the problem in living in America here is we're basically faced with a toxic food environment wherever we go. So once again, Winning the Junk Food Wars is a book full of strategies and ways to undo the junk food that starts to take over your home. I've gotten kids off of French fries, off of the white diet, and gotten them really into food, because food is such a wonderful thing. So these books are there to support parents in shifting that junk food environment.
What's one easy thing that you can do with young kids to kind of get them to shift their eating behavior?
First off, you got to make it fun. So creating a taste test is just a foolproof way to get kids to try new things. They don't seem to have any problem trying a new flavor of gummy worms. The same holds true for other food, but you've got to turn it into kind of a game and make sure that the whole family hops on board. One of the things I have found is that sometimes dads can be just like kids as far as a little picky eater or a little junk food behavior. So as parents, we have to walk the talk first and foremost. The best advertising we can make for a healthy food is to eat it and enjoy it ourselves, because that's what we're modeling. You know, our kids, they listen to us, but they really follow what we do. So it's essential that we walk our talk and really enjoy this food.
So setting an example, and I've heard also just giving them time.
Absolutely. Yes. With my daughter, I've got a story about her. She finally made a stir fry from scratch for me. And this was a kid that originally would only eat carrots. And it did. It took a half of a year to get her to that point, but she did. And now she owns that. Not only that, now she can make part of the dinner. So it's all doable. I'm here to just be a cheerleader on the sidelines saying, you can do this.
And the last book, Dump Your Diet. What's that all about?
This is about diet mythology, because there are so many diets out there. And the sad fact is that 80 to 90% of all weight loss by dieting is regained again. So how do we drop the weight? How do we lose the weight without finding it again? And that's what this Dump Your Diet book is all about. It's really putting to rest a lot of that diet mentality and diet mythology. Once again, like I said in the beginning, my approach is very eclectic and very unique. It works. So the Dump Your Diet book helps you to create a different relationship with food in your life and allows you to just let go of the whole diet insanity.
Well, I just want to thank you, Dr. Rubin, for joining us today, and you gave us just a wealth of hints and ideas for moving towards a healthy lifestyle, both for ourselves and our children. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
That's the end of our interview with Dr. Susan Rubin. I hope you have found this helpful. And for more great interviews on health, marketing and advertising, and business, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.